Okay, yes, we are here. We are live. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM. I just lost my sound again. Okay, so KPFT Houston, I have to get that right. KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. We were just a little discombobulated here. I think we're still messing with my volume. There we go. Okay, whatever we do, let's just figure out where to leave it. Are we leaving it? Okay, we are now leaving it. So I have a consistent volume. I don't know if it's enough, but it's steady. Okay, so today is the first day of early voting. And in Harris County, you can go to any polling place during the hours that they are open. You can go to harrisvotes.com and go to the early voting information. It'll tell you all the locations. You can go near your house. You can go on the way to or from work, to or from school, to or from shopping. And it'll be the same on election day in Harris County. So that's really, really cool. If you are in other counties, then check the early voting at Vote Texas. That is one word, but not the way I pronounce it. VoteTexas.gov, G-O-V. And you can also find out there what your polling places are, what the early voting rules are in your county, et cetera, et cetera. General election is November 5th. In Harris County, there is a sample ballot that runs 8 pages, but like in my case, I only have a 2-page ballot. Now, you're going to be voting, I believe, for mayor, city council, 10 constitutional amendments. And depending on where you are, there may be some propositions or bond issues or something like that. And I may talk about that a little bit more next week because I have to do my research so I can vote. Let's see. So that's the voting thing. Checking your registration. You can check your registration, make sure. Of course, the date to register has passed, but it is good to know whether or not you might have an issue at the polling place. Remember, if you have any kind of problem casting a ballot, ask for, politely, or if necessary, get a little, you know, huffy and demand a provisional ballot. You have a right to vote. You need to have the proper IDs. If they don't like the ID you have, you can still get a provisional ballot, but you'll have to then later prove your eligibility to vote. So, I mean, make sure you enforce your rights. There is voter suppression, and the voter suppression predominantly ends up being aimed against Democrats or, you know, Greens or whatever. Well, I don't know if they mind the Greens because they take votes. But make sure provisional ballot. Keep that in your mind. Let's see. If you go to or in any way are at the UH campus, there are polling places now at the UH campus. And if I'm not mistaken, I think also at TSU. Let me double check that. Early voting. Okay. Well, I know it's available at UH. I'm going to have to check and see if it's TSU. But, yeah, so that's going to be a big help because elections have consequences. In this case, we did well. We have Diane Troutman. Legislative seats, very, very important. Make sure you go all the way to the end of the ballot. And you cannot do straight party, partly because Harris County, or at least Houston, is a nonpartisan election, allegedly nonpartisan. I mean, you have Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians, and Greens, and they're all running. Independents are running. So you really need to do a little research. There is a group called the caucus.org. It's a GLBT mainly group, but I find their endorsements carry some weight because essentially their interests align with mine. It's equal protection under the law. It's basically liberal values. It's social programs. It's reasonable taxation. And I have found, I mean, I used to do a lot of checking for different sources, and you should, you know, you can check the Chronicle, you can check the lawyers, the Bar Association, you can check the unions, you can check various. I may post on my site the Harris County Democratic Party, and presumably the Republican Party, but I didn't ask them, don't like to endorse candidates in the nonpartisan part of the election. But you can contact the local community party clubs. The clubs do endorsements. So I may post some of that on my blog, thinkwingradio.com. So we'll have to see how that works out. Let's see. All right. I think that that's good for election for now. Now let's get to some information. First of all, Trump. You know, we're going to have to find like a replacement word in English because like when we used to call people Benedict Arnolds, I mean, we're going to have to figure out, you can't play bridge and call Trump and no Trump. No Trump may be okay, but we're going to have to find some new words. Trump is going to have to become a new kind of verb. In any case, all roads lead to Putin is, I believe, the quote that's making the rounds. I don't have to say it. So in commondreams.org, an information site that I don't normally use, but I think that in this case, based on my readings and hearings, it is consistent with the facts. Trump is tweeting that he is bringing the troops home. But actually, he's not bringing the troops home. He's moving them, or based on what I've heard of logistics, attempting to move them. So some troops will be going to Saudi Arabia. Some troops will be moved to eastern Syria, both places. Oh, and Iraq. And, of course, eastern Syria and Iraq are actually more dangerous than where they were. There is an interesting quote by, and I'm going to try to pronounce the name correctly, Representative Pramila Jayapal, who is a Democrat of the state of Washington, co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, said in response to the president's tweet, quote, this is memorable, "We simply cannot believe anything the Trump administration says, and neither can our allies." Of course, my reading inflection is all mine. I can't say how she would do it. And then the article itself says, news that the Trump administration is shifting forces from Syria to Iraq rather than returning them to the U.S. comes just 2 weeks after the Pentagon ordered 1,800 troops to Saudi Arabia, a move critics said put the lie to the president's claim that he is attempting to end perpetual wars. Now, keep in mind, this is the language of an article written for commondreams.org, so it's a little more bloggy and a little less journaly. Bernie Sanders is quoted as saying, remember when Donald Trump tweeted he was trying to, quote, end the endless wars? That was yesterday, Sanders said. Today, he's sending thousands of troops, warplanes, and missiles to his dictator friends in Saudi Arabia to escalate tensions with Iran. Now, that's a quote, and I'm going to assume that the quote is real, even though it's, I would say, journalistically, it's a little hyperbolic, unless he actually said it, in which case it's perfectly fair game. Also, you know, Trump is the fool that keeps on fooling. Gizmodo.com. You can tell I use eclectic sources. You wouldn't believe how many home pages open when I open my browser. I have like 10 or 12 home pages I've got. Might as well tell you what I've got. I've got the Google news aggregation site. I've got BBC America. I've got The Guardian UK. I've got the Texas Tribune. I've got the New York Times, which I subscribe to. The Washington Post, which I subscribe to. The Guardian also I subscribe to. I also open War on the Rocks, which does some interesting military diplomatic stuff. I do open the page to the Brad blog, Brad Friedman, and a couple of other things. And then, of course, I roam. I just roam. I surf. And Al Jazeera. I also have Al Jazeera as a homepage. So I try to be eclectic, and I try to use sites that at least informationally seem to agree with each other, although obviously each one looks at different angles of stories, may use different ways of framing stories, and that's okay as long as you know that's what's going on. So anyhow, Gizmodo, that is one of the home pages that I have, gizmodo.com. And the headline is, did President Trump flash his middle finger to women astronauts in this viral video? apparently, when Trump was calling the space station, the ISS, after these two women did a spacewalk, it was the first time that two women had been outside doing a spacewalk at the same time. And Trump, in the phone call, congratulated them on being the first woman to do a spacewalk. And one of the female astronauts gently, I would say, corrected him. She didn't like do an attitude, because I heard that you can go to the website. I have a link to it on thinkwingradio.com on today's show announcement. She was very nice about it. But when she did that, you can see the camera on Trump. Now, you can argue this was just a harmless gesture that kind of looks like he gave her the finger. But I think it was intended to be giving her the finger in a way that looks like a harmless gesture. You can go to my site and click on the story and watch the video for yourself. But yeah, I think there's no doubt that he didn't like the fact that he was wrong and she corrected him. And the problem is all his, because either he wasn't properly informed by his staff or he wasn't listening or reading, which is probably more likely the answer. It's like a 17-second or 30-second clip. I normally don't like to spend my time on videos because I can read faster, but this is, you know, it is what it is. Back in April, actually, I'm not going to do that yet. I think we're getting close. Andrew, why don't we run the first cassette so then I can just do this story? And, you know, we are in a fundraising mode, so we're going to take a couple of minutes. Just please don't change the dial, and then I'll get back to interesting stuff. So let's run the cassette, and let's see what we can do.
Nothing happens in a vacuum. Foreign interference in our elections, domestic voter suppression campaigns, the sale of our government to the highest bidder. The news is vital, but with just the headlines, it can be pretty confusing, especially how it connects to you. Support KPFT, Houston's Pacifica station, for the headlines and the information that help piece events together so you can make sense of it all. Become a new or renewing sustaining donor today. Your $5 or $10 a month gift makes it all possible. Call 713-526-5738, that's JAM KPFT, or go online to kpft.org.
You know, KPFT has to have the support of the community. We try to support the community, and we ask the community to help support us. We have a phone number if you want to pledge and help keep us on the air, basically. I mean, it's that simple. Hey, let's go out and have some fancy dinners with, you know, some of the other volunteers. No, we don't do that. Even the food that we get here during fundraising is all donated. We don't pay for that stuff. Which is great, by the way, and I'm sure Jack will mention when he's on who donated the food. But the phone number, 713-526-5738. Very important phone number, so I'm going to say it again. 713-526-5738. You can call that number. You can make a one-time donation, large, medium, or small. Whatever feels right for you is what we ask of you. You know, if it's a couple of bucks, if it's 10 bucks, if it's 50 or 100 or 250 bucks, that'd be great. Or if you can make a continuing donation, $10 a month, if that's something that you would not feel. And I mean, I'm in a position, I'm grateful now, I'm in a position where I can support a number of causes and organizations and newspapers and political campaigns. And I send in periodically $5, $10, $25. Occasionally I'll make a one-time donation of $50 or $100. So I'll be donating probably several hundred dollars over the course of a year. I'm now able to do that, and I'm grateful. Maybe you can. Maybe you can sometimes. Maybe you're not in a position to, and I respect that. But we really do need you to support KPFT. Again, that phone number is 713-526-5738. You can text to that number, 713-526-5738, with the word give. And then you don't even have to interact with a human. You can just follow the questions and responses and make your donation. ongoing donations are, for us, the most appreciated way. You know, if you want to give us $10 or $50 or $100 in a shot, that's wonderful. But if you feel you can do $5 or $10 or $15 a month and just put it on a credit or debit card, and if you feel that that would be fairly painless to you, that's great because it helps us with our budgeting as well as just our general revenue. So you can donate several ways. You can call 713-526-5738 and just interact with the person on the phone and tell them who you are and how to contact you and how you would like to donate, whether it's a credit card or a debit card, or you want to be able to send a check. And if you're driving, you know, most people listen to the radio in the car still. And if you're driving, if you have, like, voice activated and you can still pay reasonable attention to the road with minimal distraction, you can just tell Siri to dial 713-526-5738. Hopefully she'll get it the first time. And make your pledge. You know, a pledge is a promise. You don't have to dig out your wallet from your purse or your pocket and try to get a credit card out while you're driving at 60 miles. I mean, we don't want you doing that. But if you can simply voice dial and call 713-526-5738 and, you know, give us your information, tell us how much you would like to pledge. A pledge is a promise. That's all it is. So, we appreciate if you keep your promise. But tell us how much you would like to pledge and how you would like to do it. And we can send you an email reminder. We can send you a text reminder. We can send you a snail mail reminder that would enable you to fulfill your pledge. So there are a lot of different ways to help support KPFT. You know, it costs between $125 and $150 an hour in order to keep this station on the air, even with the volunteer help. Even with the very few people we have that are paid, and they're paid insufficiently, I might add, it takes money to run the station. There is electronic equipment that needs to be maintained and replaced. There are chairs. I mean, I know this from a fact. There are chairs that need to be replaced. We have a water cooler. You know, we have plumbing facilities. We had to replace our HVAC system. That was not cheap. So, I mean, there are ongoing expenses, electric bills. Even though we are 501c3, we're tax deductible, we are tax exempt. But even without taxes, there are still costs. And that's why we ask you to give 713-526-5738. Andrew?
And hey, if you needed, like, any more reason to donate to KPFT, we are tax deductible. You can take the donations you give us off of your taxes. That's even more reason to donate to us. And I also wanted to say, if you're in a car, a voice assistant may not be the only way you have to do it. You could, if you have one of those things that you plug your phone into a screen, you probably have like a phone app you can access, and you could just dial the number that way, because in case you don't have your assistant listening always or whatever.
But don't do it if you're driving fast.
Absolutely. Don't do it if you're driving fast.
Be stationary.
Be stationary.
But voice dial's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Although I have to say, I don't use any of the Siri stuff because I don't use voice-activated TVs. I try to turn off all my microphones because I hate to say this, and a lot of people don't care. But in order to be alive enough to respond to your commands, the microphone is always on and listens to everything you say so it can recognize a command. Now, this is just like an aside. This has nothing to do with anything I'd planned to talk about, but it is always worth remembering. Everything you say is being listened to. Now, whether it's being preserved, whether it's being dredged for information, whether some people have actually gotten ads about something they have talked about that they didn't search online, so they didn't, like, get a cookie or something, that magically started appearing on their phone pages. So, you know, the companies claim, no, that stuff is completely private. I think we should all have our doubts. Because when something is free, you are the product. If there is a service or a product that is free, you are the product. Your information, your address, your email address, your preferences, just, you know. But if you do use Siri or whatever that other one is, you can voice dial, and that's easy. Okay, getting back to my stuff. Back in April, there was an article that I talked about briefly because I thought it was interesting. I come from a photo processing background. I worked in photo finishing for about 6 years because I had an interest in photography, and now I have an interest in the business, the chemistry, the physics of photography. And the reason I bring up this April story is there was something that popped up on the BBC on Twitter. Actress Lupita Nyong'o talked to BBC's Newsnight about her experience of colorism, which she describes as the daughter of racism. She was told, and apparently this is not a unique experience, she was told, quote, "I was told I was too dark to be on television." Now, this is like a whole other thing. And it goes back to photography and ultimately film and television and movies. The lighting, the makeup because of implicit or explicit racism. These things were basically designed for European complexions. Very, very white, very fair, olive-complected, but basically white European. And now we have a lot more people of color in these media. And it is taking quite a while for makeup and lighting and color balance, and I'm talking now in a technical sense, color balance, white balance, it's taking a while for the technology and the art to catch up with the fact that now they have a whole range of human coloration that they need to make up and light correctly. So the article that came right back to me when I read this tweet from Lupita Nyong'o was called "Racial Bias Built into Photography. Sarah Lewis Explores the Relationship Between Racism and the Camera." And the question that's asked at the outset is, can a photographic lens condition racial behavior? The article looks at how the right to be recognized justly in a democracy has been tied to the impact of images and representation in the public realm. It examines how the construction of public figures limits and enlarges our notion of who counts in American society. The article further goes on to say it can be hard to technically light brown skin against light colors. So now you get into set building and set coloration. Yet, instead of seeking a solution, the technician decided that Sarah, the person in question, that Sarah's body was somehow unsuitable for the stage. This was a live discussion performance. By categorizing light skin as the norm and other skin tones as needing special corrective care, photography has altered how we interact with each other without us realizing it. Photography is not just a system of calibrating light, but a technology of subjective decisions. And I'll tell you from my personal experience, color balance is a challenging thing. There are certain light physics involved where certain colors, you get an effect. What was it called? When you have too much red or too much blue or too much of both in an image, you get an immediate color problem. There's a specific term for it that eludes me at the moment. But and that's not race related. That's just light physics and chemistry. So there's that. I mean, they are dealing with those kinds of things, strobing effect from stripes and whatnot. So they're dealing with those things. And by categorizing light skin as the norm, photography has altered how we interact with each other without realizing it. It's not just a matter of calibrating light, but a technology of subjective decisions. Light skin became the chemical baseline for film technology, fulfilling the needs of its target dominant market. For example, developing color film initially required what was called a Shirley card. And if you, again, go to my webpage, thinkwingradio.com, go to today's show post, item number 7C, you can click on that link and you can see the article, and they have the color cards that are being used. So light skin became the chemical baseline. For example, developing color film technology required the Shirley card. When you sent off your film to get developed, which is what we used to do, lab technicians would use that image of a white woman with brown hair named Shirley as the measuring stick against which they calibrated their colors. And believe me, that is a thing that's done frequently and is technically challenging and precise, based on, of course, what your reference is. Quality control meant ensuring that Shirley's face looked good, and it has translated into the color balancing of digital technology. Basically, they carried it over. In the mid-90s, Kodak created a multiracial Shirley card with three women, one black, one white, and one Asian, and later also included a Latina model, in an attempt to help the help camera operators calibrate skin tones. Those were not adopted by everyone since they coincided with the rise of digital photography. The result was that film emulsion technology still carried over the social bias of early photographic conventions. So, I mean, this is a really interesting thing, because what we're talking about is not racism. We're talking about technology and chemistry and light physics. And they just hadn't done it because there were so few people of color in media. So, for example, this is one of the things it affects. New standards meant to improve surgical care for older... No, that's a different article. Okay, it took complaints from corporate... I'll get to that. It took complaints from corporate furniture and chocolate manufacturers. So it wasn't even like a social complaint issue. It took complaints from corporate furniture and chocolate manufacturers in the 60s and 70s for Kodak, who was then the preeminent photography company, to start fixing color photography's bias. Earl Cage, Kodak's former manager of research and the head of Color Photo Studios, received complaints during this time from chocolate companies saying that they, quote, weren't getting the right brown tones on the chocolates in the photographs. Furniture companies also were not getting enough variation between the different color woods in their advertisements. Concordia University professor Lorna Roth's research shows that Cage had also received complaints before from parents about the quality of graduation photographs. The color contrast made it nearly impossible to capture a diverse group. I'm sure we've all seen that. But it was the chocolate and furniture companies that forced Kodak's hand. Cage admitted, quote, "It was never black flesh that was addressed as a serious problem at the time," unquote. Okay, apparently we have 1 minute. Ah, okay, well, let us not waste time. So one of the other things that I want to talk about, that's, again, sort of a long-form story, from the Washington Post on August 5th. You see, I save stuff. "For older people, surgery poses risks that are not always made clear." And can we just do the break a little early so I don't have to interrupt in the middle? Okay, we're going to go to a short break, and we're going to ask you for money. Please pay attention. Don't switch the dial or something. And then I'll be back.
No event happens in a vacuum. Context matters. If you don't know what led to an event, you won't know why it's happening and how it affects you and your life. KPFT, Pacifica, and our local talk shows don't just report headlines. We bring you the full story, including the events leading up to what's happening today. Support KPFT right now so we can continue sharing not just what happened, but why. Become a new sustaining donor right now. Call 713-526-5738. That's 713-JAM-KPFT. Or go online to kpft.org.
Okay, so 713-526-5738. We don't normally do commercials, so, you know, give us a little love. And call the number, 713-526-5738. Whatever you can afford to pledge is greatly appreciated. Only between 8 and 12% of listeners ever donate anything. Now, I don't want to guilt someone into not listening to the station, because we want to have a big forum. We want to invite anyone who finds something to love in this station, whether it's the talk radio or the music or the information shows, whatever it is you love about this station, we want you to continue to love it. But for us, even with all the volunteers we have and the few underpaid staff we have, there is still a cost. It costs $150 more or less a day to keep the lights on, metaphorically speaking. Maintenance, utilities, infrastructure. I mentioned the HVAC. We had to buy a new transmitter. That was big bucks. So any little bit, you know, if you feel like you can only donate a buck or $5, if you want to call in 713-526-5738, we're not going to embarrass you into donating more. If that's what you can afford and want to give, that's what you can afford and want to give. If you want to do something like $5 or $10 or $15, maybe $20 a month, a number that you feel comfortable with showing on your debit or credit card statement every month, that's wonderful. You know, that adds up for us. It's a modest number on a monthly basis for you, but it helps us in our long-term planning. So you can either call 713-526-5738, or you can text 713-526-5738. That's really easy. I mean, you can do that anywhere. You don't have to interact with a human, get into chit-chat. You know how it is. Sometimes texting is just easier. It's more straightforward. You don't have to do the social lubrication of, hi, how are you, and, you know, blah, 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 blah. So text 713-526-5738 with the word give. And that word texted to that number will give you an interactive experience that enables you to decide how much you want to give, what shows you may want to assign it to, etc. It's very, very easy. But we do have people on the phone, 713-526-5738. We also have some premiums. I don't normally talk about the premiums because fundraising is really not a thing I'm great at, and I forget. But, you know, we have a couple of things. We have a signed shirt worn by Stan Musial. It's a Cardinals shirt, and it is signed. And I don't know that we've assigned a price level to that. I'm going to leave that to Jack. We also have an Astros shirt. It's not signed, but they just got into the World Series, so I have a feeling that Astros shirts are going to be a little dear and maybe a little hard to find. We have one, and I'm going to let Jack assign a value to that because that's where the buck stops, so to speak. We also have things like socks and mugs and caps and peace hoodies and a hemp tote bag and a welcome home T-shirt that has some really nice artwork on it. Just so many different premium levels, tickets. I mean, I'm not a music show, but we have tickets and shows and just so much stuff. And if you call, you can ask about those things at the various support levels, and they'll tell you what you might qualify for if you want to get a premium. So, 713-526-5738, and now it's back to my show. Okay, so the article I was going to start on is Older People, Surgery Poses Risks That Aren't Always Made Clear. And I have some quotes from the article, so it may sound a little journaly. Bob McHenry's heart was failing, and doctors recommended two high-risk surgeries to restore blood flow. Without the procedures, 82-year-old McHenry would die. On the operating table, Bob McHenry had a stroke. For several days, he was comatose. When he awoke, he couldn't swallow or speak and had significant cognitive impairment. Vascular dementia and further physical decline followed until the 82-year-old man's death. Well, at the time, 87, 5 years later. Before her father's October 2012 surgery, quote, there was not any broad discussion of what his life might look like if things didn't go well, said Karen McHenry, 49, who writes a blog about caring for older parents. So this was her dad. She says, we couldn't even imagine what ended up happening. It's a common complaint, the story goes on. Surgeons don't help older patients and their families understand the impact of surgery in terms people can understand, even though older patients face a higher risk of complications after surgery. I mean, this goes back to the comment that there's no such thing as a minor surgery. But as you get older, things can get more complicated. You know, I take several medications. I take blood pressure and cholesterol and some NSAIDs for back pain and stuff like that. And all of those have a surgical consequence, you know, whether it's blood thinning or some other effect, which means that basically you can bleed more when they cut into you because of the NSAIDs. They're blood thinners. It's the reason they suggest, in some cases, taking small aspirins for people with heart problems. So getting back to the story, older patients typically have different priorities than younger ones, more than longevity in many cases. Older patients value their ability to live independently and spend quality time with loved ones, said Clifford Coe, a professor of surgery at UCLA's David Geffen School of Medicine. Now, new standards meant to improve surgical care for older adults have been endorsed by the American College of Surgeons. All older patients should have the opportunity to discuss their health goals and goals for the procedure, as well as their expectations for their recovery and their quality of life after surgery, according to these new standards. Surgeons should review the patient's advanced directives, instructions for the care they want in the event of a life-threatening medical crisis, or offer patients without these documents the chance to complete them. Surrogate decision makers authorized to act on a patient's behalf should be named in the medical record. So essentially, we're talking about, I guess, what they call living wills, where if you go into a surgery and come out incapable of making decisions, whether it's because you had a stroke or you don't regain consciousness or you're unable to speak, aphasia, I think it's called, you need someone who can speak for you, and you want someone that you trust will make decisions as you would in your absence. Do I have it? No. Should I? Absolutely. I have the name of an estate attorney and a guy who does wills, and I really, really, really need to call him, and so do you. We all need this stuff. I'm 68. I got no excuse. If you're 40, you've got no excuse, but at least you're young enough to have the illusion you'll live forever. 20, you'll live forever. Andrew, you want to say something?
Yeah, I was actually having this discussion with my parents a few days ago, and they actually told me to go ahead and just start writing a will, you know, at my age, because you never know when death can strike, you know, and
we can all drop dead at any moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I absolutely agree with you. I mean, you know, even it's seen as a thing that, you know, people who are quote unquote over the hill, you know, kind of do. But, you know, there's no reason not to have it now. And my dad told me it's kind of like life insurance. Life insurance is cheaper the sooner you get it. So if you can afford it.
Well, you know, they're betting you're not going to die, and you're betting you are.
Yeah, exactly. So.
And I'll also point this out. I do have a will. It's probably not great from a legalistic, jargonistic standpoint, but I'll tell you what my incentive was, what finally got me to at least get that will done. I am divorced. And the last will that I had named my ex-wife. And if that was the only will in existence, that would be the will that would be enforced. So, like, if you are divorced, or if you ever had a will that for one reason or another named people or a person that now you would absolutely not want in your will, just remember, you need a superseding will in order to make that one invalid. And you know, for me, that was the incentive to do even a sloppy will, just to make sure that my ex couldn't show up, you know, 30, 40 years after the divorce when I pass and say, I've got this will from 1979. And, you know, if he doesn't have anything else, I guess I get all his stuff. I would not be a happy camper. I would spin in my grave. You could generate power if you attached a generator to me in my grave. By the way, my great-grandfather was a rabbi. You could probably attach a generator to him spinning in his grave because of how far I have come, but that's a whole other story. So getting back to this, if a stay in intensive care is expected after surgery, this is for an older person specifically, that should be made clear along with the patient's instructions on interventions such as feeding tubes, dialysis, blood transfusions, cardiopulmonary resuscitation, and medical ventilation. And the story says, what we don't ask is, and I think they're talking about ourselves as well as the doctors we interface with, what does living well mean to you? What do you hope to be able to do in the next year? and what should the surgeon, the doctor, know about you to provide good care, said Ronnie Rosenthal, a professor of surgery and geriatrics at Yale School of Medicine. I'm going to tell a little story. I had back in, I guess it was about 2009, I had eye surgery on my right eye. Let's see, what was the problem? The problem was I had what they called an epiretinal membrane. Basically, I had a little piece of skin or material that was growing across my retina, creating a blind spot. And I still have that blind spot, by the way. So I talked to a retinal specialist. It got to a point where surgery... I was told about it a number of years before, and I was told by the ophthalmologist, watchful waiting is the way to handle it. And I don't recommend that anymore. And if anybody, after we start taking phone calls again next week, if anybody wants to ask me about this, I'll be happy to tell them. So finally, I had this operation where they peeled back the membrane in order to make sure, A, it didn't cover more retina, and B, to give the retina a chance to recover to the extent it can. Now, to this day, at about the 2 o'clock position off center, I have a dead spot. It's blank. My brain mostly fills it in, but there are times that I can see it. And around that dead spot is distortion. So it's kind of like the event horizon of a black hole. It's kind of annoying. But what... And I mean, that was something that was out of the control of the doctor. That might have been prevented if I had done it sooner, if I had not done watchful waiting quite as waiting. And that's another discussion entirely. But what he told me at the time was there was a chance that the surgery itself would cause a cataract, that opening up the eye, even with a tiny incision, removing the fluid, which he had to do to, you know, extract the membrane. But that exposure to air, he said it was possible that I might end up with a cataract that would basically make me blind, that would make me a candidate for an artificial lens to be inserted. And lo and behold, I got a cataract, and I was legally blind in that eye. Now, the definition of legally blind is not that you can't see without your glasses. Without my glasses, I'm legally blind. I've got like 2,500 vision in my left eye. My right eye is 20/60, except I've got a hole in a event horizon. So it's kind of a mixed bag. So after I got the cataract, and I went for one of my regular checkups after the surgery, and I told him about the cataract, and he said, oh, yeah, that almost always happens. Now, almost always happens was not the thing he told me initially. What he told me was there was a possibility. If he had told me it always happens, you know, maybe I would have just had the lens insertion done with the surgery. I don't know, but or at least I would have been prepared. So that gets into the definition of legally blind. Legally blind is when your best corrected vision, I think the line is 2200. If with glasses, with corrective things, if you can only see at a level of 2200 with correction, that's legally blind. I couldn't see anything out of that right eye, and that went on for about 6 months. So had I been informed, would I have done something differently? Maybe. There are choices I would have made differently. The correction, the lens insertion was basically successful. But, you know, this is part of being properly informed, knowing what the risks are, knowing what the probabilities of the risks are, and then making an informed decision. You know, you cross your fingers, you take your chances. Okay, Andrew, you said that we're at that moment? Oh, it's me. Oh, yeah, we're at that three-quarter point because my clock here isn't working, so I'm working off my watch. We are asking for your support. We have had some donors that we want to thank that have contributed to KPFT and Thinkwing Radio. We have, do I give the names and amounts? I know that we've changed on that a little bit. Just names. Okay. John Davis gave a generous donation. Really, thank you. Kurt Gerdrum, also a generous donation. And, man, that makes a big difference. Scott Tillinghast, another generous donation. Betty Pringer, a very kind donation. John Wagoner made a nice donation. Derek McNeil, Thomas Martinez both made very nice donations. We have a total of 700. Is that today's? Andrew, is that today's total? That's $780. Oh, that's for all three. Okay, so that's for today and the prior two fundraising shows. We've raised almost $800. Now, that isn't our goal. That actually would be close to a one-day goal. And we do appreciate all those people that made that donation. We need some more. Does that sound greedy? You know, we don't mean to sound greedy, but we need some help. It's tax deductible if you itemize. We're a 501c3. You can call 713-526-5738. There are people on the phone. You can text 713-526-5738 and just type in the word give, and you'll get your interactive thing. If you're driving and you have voice dialing, you can tell Siri or equivalent to dial 713-526-5738 and then interact with a person on the phone and just give them the information they request, and then later on you can fulfill your pledge. You don't have to dig for a wallet or dig for a credit card. We don't want you to do anything dangerous while you're driving. But to the extent you feel it is safe to do so, you can interact through your voice dialing and your remote phone microphone. So, thank you to our donors. We do. Are there more donors, or is that a duplicate? No, that's a duplicate. But more donors would be nice. Hey, guys, you know, I'm not going to ask you to donate again. So let's talk about the roughly 90% of listeners that probably have never donated to support KPFT. We appreciate your listenership. Make no mistake about that. But if you feel that you have gotten some pleasure, some joy, some information, some news, some opportunity for discussion, if you feel you have gotten some kind of value from Thinkwing Radio or any of the other shows, whether it's Politics Done Right or any of the other shows that we have that are talk shows, call-in shows, music shows, health shows, consider supporting the station that provides you with those generally commercialist shows. Unfortunately, right now we're doing a commercial, but we don't always do that, so you know, be patient with us. 713-526-5738. We do have some premiums. We have a shirt that is signed by Stan Musial from the St. Louis Cardinals, and he has worn that shirt, not necessarily extensively, but he has worn and autographed the shirt, and that is a premium which we can negotiate a donation level for. We also have an unsigned but currently precious Astros shirt, because now they're in the World Series. They're going to be playing the Nats. So I imagine they're never cheap, but I imagine they're going to get harder to find. So maybe this is a size you would like that you can wear. Or maybe you can bring it to a game and get it signed. You know, it's in a bag. So that could be pretty cool. There are things that we have to try to incentivize you to support KPFT. Material things, whether it's hoodies or mugs or socks. My mom had a KPFT mug. It's one of the things I got when she passed. So I value that. It's like double valuable to me. There are so many different ways you can enjoy supporting the station while you're supporting the station. So just remember, 713-526-5738. You can call any time. I mean, during the show, it'll be credited to this show. Or you can call any other time and either get that show's credit. Okay, we'll get to that in a second. So you can either call any time and you know, credit the show during the call when that show is on the air, or you can specify a show that isn't on the air. So many different ways. I mean, it's crazy. You can also, and I forgot to say this, you can also go to kpft.org and just click on the donate jar. You know, that site has all kinds of information on shows and hosts and schedules and programming and events coming up. kpft.org. It's a great place to visit from time to time. We have archives there. You can download podcasts. We've really gotten to be like a very modernized station. It's taken work. You know, Bobby and other technicians work really, really hard at doing this stuff. He's one of the paid inadequately professional people that we have. He's great. I was just given a note that Stan Musial was once a Houston Buff. I'm not sure exactly what that means. Does someone want to help me out on that? I see Andrew waving. Yeah, whoever gave... Yeah, go ahead and tell me here. Tell me what that means.
Stan Musial played for the Houston Buffs, and the Houston Buffs were the St. Louis Cardinals AAA franchise.
Are you talking Buffaloes?
Yes. Their stadium was at the corner of I-45 and Scott Street, and the original home plate there was part of the building when they tore the stadium down.
And it became
a Houston Sports Museum.
They built fingers over it.
Yes.
And I guess now has been converted into a sports museum?
I understand they're tearing the building down and they're going to relocate the museum.
Ah.
But there's a huge connection from St. Louis to Houston because for years St. Louis had KMOX, an AM radio station that was 50,000 watts. So old timers here in Houston were St. Louis Cardinals fans.
Because the team moved.
Yes.
Ah. So you can get the Stan Musial signed shirt for the Cards. Hall of Famer. I mean, even I know Stan Musial, and I am not a sports guy. But you can get that shirt and be both supporting or showing your support for Stan, the man, the St. Louis Cards, and Houston. It's all intertwined.
History.
So, yeah, just that's great. Thank you so much for sharing that. Okay, so that shirt, multiply valuable, and I think if you call, Jack will help to negotiate a premium level for that. Okay, Andrew, I because the time has kind of gotten funky on me now, what am I at? Am I talking about any of my stories, or are we doing some, or is Jack getting on, or what are we doing?
Well, I believe you wanted to close out the show with a bit of a spiel about donating again.
Of course, I have been spieling.
And you have been spieling.
And I've been spieling now for about 5 or 10 minutes.
Really? It's up to you, I guess. Do you want to get back to the articles?
Yeah, let me get back to articles, and I'll save a couple of minutes at the end.
All right.
If that's okay with Jack.
Sounds great.
Okay. Jack is our interim general manager, very nice guy. I like him a lot, and I want to bend to his will, if that's a phrase I may use. There's another interesting article. Which one? You know what? I'm going to save that. I'm going to go to this one because this is kind of interesting. This article... I don't have a date on it. It must be several months old. And I have a link to it at thinkwingradio.com. By the way, you can also follow me on Twitter, at Thinkwing Radio, and on Facebook, Thinkwing Radio with Mike Koenig. It's really very easy. And the title of the article was, "You know who is into Karl Marx? Not AOC. Abraham Lincoln." Apparently, the two men were friendly and influenced each other. In December of 1861, when President Lincoln sent his first annual message, what later became the State of the Union, by the next day, all 7,000 words of the manuscript were published in newspapers across the country, including the Confederate South. This was Lincoln's first chance to speak to the nation at length since his inauguration. He railed against the disloyal citizens rebelling against the Union, touted the strength of the Army and Navy, and updated Congress on the budget. For his eloquent closer, and this is a punchline, I guess, he chose not a soliloquy on unity or freedom, but an 800-word meditation on what the Chicago Tribune at the time subtitled Capital versus Labor. If you think that sounds like something Karl Marx would write, well, that might be because Lincoln was regularly reading Karl Marx. This is, by the way, this was totally news to me when I ran across this. President Trump has added a new arrow in his quiver of attacks as of late, charging that a vote for any Democrat in the next election is a, quote, vote for the rise of radical socialism, and that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and other congresswomen of color are, quote, a bunch of communists. Yet the first Republican president for whom Trump has expressed admiration, perhaps grudging, perhaps phony, but nonetheless, was surrounded by socialists and looked to them for counsel. Of course, Lincoln was not a socialist, nor a communist, nor a Marxist, just as Speaker Pelosi and Minority Leader Charles Schumer aren't, although Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders identify as Democratic Socialists, and I still don't understand the difference between that and Social Democrats, but that's another show. But Lincoln and Marx were born only 9 years apart, and they were contemporaries, and they had many mutual friends and read each other's work, and in 1865 exchanged letters. Now, the article, of course, is longer than that. Even as much as I excerpted, there's more. So, thinkwingradio.com. I link to just about everything I talk about, unless it's something that comes up randomly. I have a lot of notes and a lot of links, and it's actually a great source. And you can search it. You can go to the website. There is a search window. So if you have a terminology or a name or something, you don't remember when I did the show or know if I did the show, you can do a search, just like Google, and it's probably powered by Google or Bing or something. Okay, are we at that time now? We are at that time. I hope you have enjoyed this unusual long format style show. I will be looking forward to taking phone calls next week. It'll be the same number that we use for donations, 713-526-573. Andrew's shaking his head. We are doing call-ins next week, right? Yeah, okay. Just wanted to make sure. We're going to go back to the call-in format. But I have to tell you, this opportunity to do kind of long-form stuff, I love talking to you guys, but this stuff never really gets covered or covered adequately, so that's just great. But right now, what we want to do for the last couple of minutes is give you an opportunity, after having listened to the show, hopefully found value in the discussions, maybe found reasons to want the radio station to stay on the air, this show to stay on the air, because, you know, we don't do ratings so much, so donations are like ratings. 713-526-5738. That is the number to call. That is the number to text with the word give. That is the number to tell Siri to dial for you. That is also next week a place you can call in, whether you're, you know, this is Think Wing Radio. Think Wing means even if you're on the right, even if you're on the left, maybe if you're in the center, that's great. I talk to everybody. But have a thought about why you think what you think. Be open to discuss it, even if no minds are changed. That's my philosophy. That's why I call it Think Wing instead of right wing, left wing, or something else. Or the Mike Koenig Show, which actually was my first choice, and then I was talked out of it. Okay, so apparently we're doing the 58. So please support KPFT, 713-526-5738, and all its myriad ways of using it for contact. And remember, we have premiums. If you call, ask about them. I'll talk to you guys next week. I will look forward to actually talking to you guys next week. Take care.